Welcome to Vegas Inc. Radio. I'm Dylan Goldberg, host of the show and business editor of Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. Over the next half hour, we'll discuss all things G2E. The Global Gaming Expo landed last week in Las Vegas at the Sands Expo Center, and we had three reporters on the ground there. Welcome to reporter Rick Velotta. Steve Green.
Good morning.
And Ron Sylvester.
Hi.
So 25,000 people at the convention center for all things gaming. This is the biggest gaming convention in the world, and this is the 12th year that it's been here in Las Vegas. What did we learn?
Well, I think we learned all kinds of things from the fact that they had a number of panels, like more than 100 panels, at which they talked about every type of issue confronting the gaming industry today, all the way down to some of the many thousands of products that I know Ron was out on the floor seeing a lot of those things, and just reading about some of the things that he has seen out on the floor has just been a lot of fun.
Excellent. Well, Ron, why don't you jump in? You had a story in Vegas Inc. and the Sun about the top 10 newest products in the gaming world. What are some of those products we'll see next year?
Well, some of them are games and some of them are just new technology going into the casinos. A couple of the games, to start off with the fun stuff, is there's a new Superman slot machine, and it's got two rows on it, and you can either bet it as a penny slot or you can bet it as a multiple dollar slot, and so you can bet up to $2.50 if you bet on Superman, or you can bet up to $25 on Lex Luthor, because bad guy is greedier and wants to take your money. That's the theme of it. So that's one. Of course, you know, we know about the new KISS and NASCAR slot machines, but there are a couple of other ones. The Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory themed one, I mean, it was packed for every day. There were people waiting in line to try this out. It's much like the Aladdin slot that we had talked about, where it has the moving chair, and on the Aladdin slot machine, it's WMS, same company, and on the Aladdin, you'll take a magic carpet ride, while on Willy Wonka, you go down the chocolate river, and so that's pretty interesting, too.
And the chair actually moves with the game.
Yeah, and you can feel like you're riding through the chocolate river, and, you know, Gene Wilder pops up. It's pretty amazing.
And now it's not only about big names and celebrities sponsored. You wrote one about two sumo cats?
The Sumo Kitty. It's when you've got a big fat cat in a diaper, and when you hit the bonus, it will jump out at you, and then two kitties will chest bump each other and do the sumo wrestling thing during the bonus. Those are the kinds of things the manufacturers say really the players gravitate to. You can have all the celebrity names, you can have all the bells and whistles. People like just the kind of the reels with the interesting cartoon characters will draw players. And then IGT, one of the things they had was it's kind of a side menu. It's a separate screen. So on one screen you'll see the reels and you'll see all the regular stuff on the slot machine. And then on the side screen you'll have a different menu where you can order all sorts of amenities. Like you can plug in the valet, and you can request your car. You can play the slot a little bit longer, plug a little bit more money in for the casino, and then your car will be waiting. And they also have it on that side menu to where you can actually, if you hit a big jackpot, You can figure up your taxes and you can cash out and then get your ticket, for $1 million and go over to the casino cage and cash it.
Minus your taxes?
Yeah, where you used to have to wait till an attendant came over and they double checked it, and then they would figure all this out, and it would take that machine down for a half an hour. If you hit a big jackpot. Well, now the point is, yes, it's more convenient to the customer, but also they get that machine back in play more quickly, and then somebody else can sit down and plug money into it.
And you also mentioned it's kind of like eBay in that you can bid on amenities like a buffet using your players' points.
Yeah, and they'll have, I saw one example today too of a gas card, but like they'll have a thing pop up and they'll say, we've got a buffet available for 100 of your player points, and then somebody can sit there while they're playing the slot machine and they can put in, well, no, I want to bid 101 off my player's card. And then, all the players in the casino will sit and they can bid, on that buffet, or like I said, a gas card was another example. They were getting just different kinds of things. And so you really bid it like eBay, but you use your player's points. It's, kind of an interesting way to sell you more stuff.
This is Steve. One thing that's really interesting about this is not just the consumer side of it, but the gaming industry is really expanding, and that's why these slot machines and new gizmos that Ron is talking about are doubly interesting, because you're seeing really expansion like we haven't seen in several years. Not in Las Vegas, of course. We're still trying to recover from the recession, but you're seeing it on the East Coast, Maryland, Massachusetts, probably New York. We saw last week that Bally is selling a new type of video gaming machine in Illinois along with IGT. You have big expansions underway or planned in Macau. So all these slot machine makers are well positioned to grow with these neat products that Ron is talking about.
And do you think the neat products help them to grow, or they would grow anyway with the old one-eyed bandits?
Well, they would grow anyway, but to be really competitive in their market, they've got to have the newest and best slot.
And I think another part of it is that they are appealing to a large number of different types of customers. I mean, there may be some customers who would go in there and really get a kick out of things like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Then there's some that would go in there and they just like the I Love Lucy or the Jeopardy or the Wheel of Fortune, any of those things that they're familiar with. The idea that these different manufacturers have is that they have to market their products differently to attract a different type of customer. And this is particularly true about one of the points that Ron made, and that is that some of the people that are coming up in the ranks, some of the young Gen Xers that are coming up and starting to play more, they're a lot more comfortable with the technology, a lot more comfortable with the bidding process and the things that you have to do online. So this is targeted directly at them, and those who can multitask, playing a slot machine and getting your car out of valet and being in a competitive bid process with other players with your loyalty card, I mean, that takes somebody who really knows the technology, and I think that that's one of the things they're doing. They know they're not going to expand necessarily geographically, although, as Steve pointed out, there is a lot more happening elsewhere than there is here. But at the same time, they know that they can expand within the different generations of people who are going to the casino.
And that's part of their 5-year plan, right? You went
exactly.
to a panel with some of the biggest names in gaming industry, and that's what they said is over 5 years.
Sure, they don't see a lot of new resorts popping up. Although we've seen a few things happen elsewhere. Certainly, Macau is still growing, albeit not as fast as it once was. But they recognize that if they're going to grow, if they're going to continue to expand the market, they have to be a little bit more careful about how they approach it. And marketing to different generations is one of those ways.
All right, you're listening to Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm your host, Dellen Goldberg, business editor of Vegas Inc. and Las Vegas Sun, and I'm speaking today with several of our reporters who are covering G2E. So now let's talk about the state of gaming. Is it doing well? Is it hurting still from the recession? What's the big picture?
Well, some of the panel that I attended, and then also an address by Frank Fahrenkopf, who is the chief executive officer of the American Gaming Association, which puts on G2E. The big picture on that is that, yeah, things are kind of just kind of like they're doing in Las Vegas. They're growing little by little. They had a tough second quarter. First quarter looked like it was going to go gangbusters. Then things slowed down, but now it's starting to drive a little bit better in terms of some of the raw numbers that come out. I'm sure Steve has a lot more evidence about that. But the fact is that it's just kind of slogging along, and that's probably because of the effects of the recession still having a grip on some of the states like Nevada. Quite frankly, we're the probably ones that are affected the most by this. But meanwhile, we're seeing some other things that are happening elsewhere, and there's a big potential for growth internationally because of the successes that have occurred in Macau and in Singapore. Some of the countries overseas in Asia, for example, Vietnam, Cambodia, South Korea, Taiwan, are looking at the success, especially in Singapore, of these integrated resorts that have been built. They say, gee whiz, we can not only get convention traffic, we can get tourism traffic, and the casino is something else that we can generate some revenue off of. That may be something that we can do. So, you've got these American companies that are all too willing to build overseas if they can make it pencil out for them. And that's why you see MGM International building a non-gaming casino in Vietnam right now. Eventually, that could become a gaming property. Certainly, the properties or the companies from Las Vegas that are working in Macau right now have had a great deal of success there. And we're going to be seeing Steve Wynn's company building a new resort in the Cotai Strip area in Macau. So it's one of those things where probably the expansion of gaming is more pronounced overseas than it is in the United States. Although in the United States, we do see some markets that are growing up. Maryland, New York, Ohio, those are some areas that are expanding at a greater clip than anything in Las Vegas. I think one of the things that's probably disappointing to people here in Las Vegas is that nobody sees any new resorts in Las Vegas on the near horizon. And I think that people are disappointed in that because, gosh, if you were here in the 90s, it seemed like there was a new resort every other year or every year, and sometimes there were two or three at one time in a year. That type of growth is not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, obviously, you mentioned some of our biggest companies, MGM, Wynn, Caesars, they all have properties overseas. With that expansion, is that going to hurt Las Vegas? I mean, the companies are still going to be making money, but how about all the ancillary support?
I don't think that there's been any evidence that growth in Macau or elsewhere around the world has actually hurt Las Vegas. There's also the counter-argument that it increases interest in Las Vegas being the real thing, and we get a lot of international traffic. I think that Las Vegas is facing some real competition from the East Coast now with some of these resorts that are planned in Boston, possibly New York could have a major expansion. It just gives people another reason not to come to Las Vegas if they can go to a similar resort type experience on the East Coast. One thing that Rick mentioned that is really interesting and is true is we're not seeing new capacity in Las Vegas. If we see something, it'll be small. You know, you might see the Sahara turned into SLS Las Vegas. That's a few thousand rooms a few years down the road. But nothing, Echelon is still 3 or 4 years away. Nothing major. And so that's not really good for Las Vegas, as Rick says, but it's very good news for our biggest companies, being Caesars, MGM, because it means they don't have to have those extra rooms as competition. And so Caesars in particular is in pretty poor financial shape. Some analysts, bond analysts, have publicly said it could be looking at bankruptcy. And so this lack of extra capacity in Las Vegas is really good news for Caesars, which is investing heavily in Las Vegas despite its financial difficulties.
And Caesars' troubles are juxtaposed with some companies that are doing really well. You're our money guy. Who's succeeding and why?
Well, the companies with exposure to Macau are obviously doing the best. Las Vegas Sands is now by far the largest gaming company because of the revenue from Macau. It reported a very strong profit in the first half. In fact, we did a story yesterday where the Las Vegas Sands executives are saying they have so much cash they're not quite sure what to do with it. They don't need it. And so they might increase the dividend to shareholders, buy back some shares or something. But it's really a turnaround story from 4 or 5 years ago when Las Vegas Sands itself was thought to be on the brink of bankruptcy before Sheldon Adelson bailed it out with his personal fortune. So it's really MGM Resorts is seen as being in stronger financial shape because of Macau. City Center is doing better, and so it's gradually improving. I think Boyd Gaming is probably in pretty solid financial shape because it's in the Midwest and South, and those are pretty stable markets. So the gaming companies themselves, it really depends on where is their exposure and what their debt levels are. For Caesars, which is a basket case right now, it's in two of the worst markets, Las Vegas and Atlantic City. And Gary Lubman, the CEO, says, hey, we're a wonderful, profitable company on an operating basis, but we've got to do something about our $19 billion in debt. We just can't service that with our current capital structure.
And what does that mean for actual Caesars? I mean, what does bankruptcy or potential bankruptcy mean? Caesars Palace isn't going to be shuttered anytime soon?
No, these properties are all profitable on a property cash flow type basis. So I think in a bankruptcy, you might see some of the properties spun off to different groups that could acquire them. I think it would be quite contentious because Caesars wants to keep its empire together because it has the Total Rewards program where they take their customers in Chicago and New Orleans and all over the country and divert them to Las Vegas to use their Total Rewards points. So they want to keep that national distribution network. They don't want to lose it. They want to keep the company together. But in a bankruptcy, we saw this with Tropicana Entertainment. It was broken up because the debt holders, they're the ones that would call the shots.
And how does online poker and all those new technologies that are emerging factor into this picture?
One of the things that I thought was interesting, and Steve really drove this point home, and that is that even though the Las Vegas may not be doing that well, there is some hope because some of these Las Vegas-based companies are sending their best customers to Las Vegas. Well, the same argument is being made regarding the online poker. You know, there are some people out there who say, "Gee, if I can play poker on the internet, what's going to motivate me to come into one of the brick and mortar casinos?" Well, because the actual experience of being in the casino is something that would appeal to some of the folks who are playing online. And right now, you know, technically, it's still illegal to play online in the United States, but lots of Americans do that. And that's one of the reasons why the American Gaming Association is so bent on trying to get some kind of legislation passed. I don't think that there's anybody in the industry that is really optimistic that that's going to happen before the end of the year. There was some discussion about, well, maybe in the lame duck session after the election, that there could be a push to pass some legislation. But there's so many other priorities that are ahead of online poker right now that it isn't too likely that this is going to happen, even though Senator Reid and Senator John Kyle of Arizona have legislation put together. It just doesn't look like it's in the cards. And one of the things that was brought up by Frank Fahrenkopf is that it's going to need some gambler's luck for this to even occur.
Well, go ahead.
And one of the things that they're talking about the casinos of the future, while we may not see new properties and new casinos and new resorts springing up in Las Vegas, what we are going to see is we're going to see a massive change in what's inside of those. And a lot of the folks who are in casino design and marketing and the gaming part of the industry, the manufacturer of games, say that we're going to see these big boxes of slots go away, and because they need to, as Rick was saying, they need to appeal to a younger audience who's much more tech savvy. So there was a panel I went to where they were actually talking about that the casino of the future will be these boutique bars and restaurants where you will sit and you'll play the slots on a tablet-type device. The big boxes will give way to these smaller devices that are throughout the casino where you can pick the games that you want. You can, much like you've got the built-in video poker machines at the bars, you'll actually be able to sit at a bar with an iPad and play slots while your friends are doing something else. There was one architect said, as an example, he said he was talking to a friend the other night who said that he was sitting in the lounge at Red Rock having a beer. He was playing poker on his phone. He was watching a game that he had bet on the TV, and he was playing a video poker machine. And so all this multitasking is going to lead to the casinos being redesigned, but it's all going to be wireless. So this online gaming is actually going to be a part, and the same technology is going to be a part of what runs the casinos.
Going back to poker, which is really what people are buzzing about, online poker, we should be clear about what we're talking about when Rick mentioned the possibility of poker legislation. We should, you know, kind of background that. What's happened is that the U.S. Justice Department has determined that online gambling is legal in the United States for those states that want to authorize it. And by online gambling, I don't mean just poker, me playing against you. I mean virtual online casinos. And so the fear is that states all over the country are going to allow online gambling, not just poker, and that would hurt Nevada. So what Rick's talking about is some legislation that would restrict online gaming in the United States to simply competitive poker, not video poker, but me playing against you. Most of the business people that we talked to at G2E this week are pragmatic. They don't see this legislation happening anytime soon, if ever. And already states are moving ahead with their own online gaming programs. We already have online gambling in the United States in the form of lottery sales and sports betting. You can do it right now as we speak in Nevada. And so these online experts and business people that we talked to this week, they're pragmatic. They're going to start looking at creating online gambling sites that are not just player-to-player poker, but real, like, video poker, online roulette, online slot machines. I think we're poised to see a real explosion in online gambling in the United States unless, you know, Harry Reid miraculously pulls this off.
Well, and already we're seeing the increase in ancillary betting, quote-unquote, online. So the programs where you can go on your computer, earn points or coins, and then take them back to the casino and play them there.
Or you got the free Facebook games.
Exactly.
Yeah, you've got social media exploding, and what they're doing is they're priming the pump for when online gambling opens up, whether that is poker only or online casinos. And we're hearing more and more about it. At the day we're taping this, we were at the Gaming Control Board today. Boyd Gaming was saying, hey, you know, we're hoping that it's more than just strictly player-to-player poker. Bally Technologies, in its latest public statements, has said, we're poised to do anything you want online that you can do in a real casino. So I think we're on the verge of a real explosion of online gambling in the United States.
The reality, though, is that poker, you know, person against person doesn't make the companies very much money, and that's why there's this push to do some of these other games. The downside for Nevada is that we can only offer it intrastate, so you can play these games within the state, but once you look to some of the markets out there that would be very lucrative for us, California comes to mind, we can't offer those games to Californians. So one of the things that Governor Sandoval's gaming study committee had looked at was the possibility of doing state-to-state compacts with different states in order to increase the number of customers, potential customers. And I think that's an interesting thing that I'm sure is going to be before the control board and the commission in the months ahead.
It will, and if that happens, and it's going to be really interesting because it was pointed out at G2E this week that if Nevada tried to connect with California or Florida and do a state-by-state compact, guess who has to approve that? Congress.
Wow.
And what the delegates at G2E and the experts said is Congress over the years doesn't mind approving compacts if it involves Nevada and Arizona for electricity or the Colorado River. But you start talking about gambling, then you bring in the entire anti-gambling people, and you have a big debate in Congress. So this thing is going to be, I would call it unsettled for a few years.
We're talking to Steve Green, Ron Sylvester, and Rick Velotta, reporters with Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun, on Vegas Inc. Radio, 7 a.m. Mondays, KUNV 91.5. This week we're talking about G2E, the Global Gaming Expo.
Well, and one of the things that people were talking about from a consumer standpoint is that these free games on Facebook and through the social media that we're seeing is they're extremely popular, and they're whetting the appetite of the people who play the free games to do more. I talked to one person who said, yeah, I've been playing those free slots on Facebook, and all of a sudden I find myself buying more tokens so I can play more. Well, I mean, that's just the same as putting money into a slot machine, and because you're buying these extra credits, which you can't. I mean, they're free up to a certain point. And so that pulls you in, and these are amazingly popular. And one of the fears is, just within the industry, is that, you know, it used to be, you know, WMS, Bally, IGT. Well, now they're competing with Zynga and some of these, you know, other online-only companies. And in the future, you know, that's going to be their competition. It's not going to just be this big three or big four. There's other players out there developing games, other developers, you know, getting into this.
Absolutely. Well, we're running out of time, but we'd be remiss if we don't talk about a fairly shocking comment from one of the biggest casino heads. This didn't happen at G2E, but it happened because of G2E. Gary Loveman made a pretty inflammatory statement about the Fontainebleau. Steve, you were there. What did he say?
Well, a few years ago when Fontainebleau was first shut down and basically they were looking for somebody to buy it or finance it, there were published reports that Caesars itself or its deep-pocketed owners had taken a look at it and were thinking about buying it. Nobody bought Fontainebleau because basically it was in the middle of the recession and there was no hope that it could be profitable in the short term, and it would cost, you know, maybe $1 billion to finish. So it ended up, Carl Icahn bought it for like $150 million, which is unbelievable for a resort that was planned to be $3 billion. So it's been sitting idle since 2009. No plans have been announced by Icahn, and he's pretty shrewd. He'll do something smart with it, whether it's flipping the land or figuring out a way to resume construction when the market is right. So what happened this week is Gary Loveman was talking to analysts, and he was describing, you know, how in the boom years it was so easy to get money and build these mega resorts. And he pointed out that Fontainebleau is a prime example of that. And it might end up being a scrap metal salvage deal for Carl Icahn, and so he's not real positive about Fontainebleau either the way it was developed and conceived or its future possibilities.
And have we heard from Mr. Icahn about any of this?
Not yet, but he's pretty shrewd, and he's not going to say anything until he's ready to actually do something with it.
All right, well, thank you so much for sharing all that you learned at G2E. You'll have to come back again the next time the convention is in town. We were talking to reporters Rick Velotta, Steve Green, and Ron Sylvester. This is Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm your host, Dellen Goldberg, business editor of Vegas Inc. Thanks to Steven Zeller, our producer, and the KUNV team. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your day.